Hello, Happy New Year, and welcome to The View from the Lane, our Tottenham Hotspur podcast from The Athletic. My name is Jack Pitbrook, and I'm joined today by James Moore and Charlie Eccleshare. Right now, you can subscribe to The Athletic for a special one-off price. Enjoy great analysis and in-depth features from the very best football writers around, as well as ad-free versions of all of our podcasts for less than £4 per month. Just go to theathletic.com/SpursPod to sign up and enjoy The Athletic throughout 2021. That's theathletic.com/SpursPod. It's been 2 weeks since our last podcast, during which time Spurs have beaten Stoke City, drawn with Wolves, had a game cancelled against Fulham, and then beaten Leeds United. Charlie, overall, positive Christmas break?
Yeah, with those games, I mean, taking in Leicester, definitely not. If you exclude Leicester, then I think you'd describe it as mixed, probably. I mean, I was talking about this with James and, you know, saying I don't think Wolves, drawing away at Wolves in isolation is not a terrible result. I think it was the context around that and the kind of Palace flashbacks that it invoked that frustrated people. But yeah, I mean, getting the Leeds win was really important. First win in nearly a month since the North London Derby. And it felt like a bit of a reset after Wolves, after Leicester, after Liverpool, after Palace. So I don't think it's been a hugely successful kind of festive period, but at least they finished it off with a win that they really needed.
James, you must have enjoyed the Leeds game after a pretty miserable run in the league.
Yeah, I mean, I think as Charlie says, you know, drawing at Palace and drawing at Wolves in isolation, I think are sort of not abysmal results, but I think the way those two games panned out, the fact Spurs were in front and seemingly in control in the first half and then sort of surrendered that initiative and invited pressure in both those games, it clearly was pretty frustrating. So to come back and to sort of kill off a game really in the first sort of 55 minutes against a team who are really dangerous, I think that was encouraging. I mean, Leeds are you know, obviously a good side. I don't think many teams will have, and we talked about this a little bit earlier on, but I don't think many teams will have kind of beaten them as convincingly as that without conceding goals. I mean, obviously, yeah. Manchester United beat them 6-2. Liverpool beat them 4-3. So I think actually to beat them 3-0, I think is actually kind of quite impressive in a way. You know, to kind of comprehensively beat them without kind of surrendering that kind of defensive solidity, I think is actually pretty impressive.
Yeah, and it was proof, wasn't it? It was a bit like the City, Arsenal, or even the Man United away game in the sense that it showed, or Southampton at the start of the season, Spurs are at their best when they're against a team who play aggressive football. If they're against a team who come out and play and Spurs have got space to counter-attack into, Tottenham are really, really good. And I haven't seen anybody else really kind of come to terms with what Leeds are doing tactically in quite that way, Charlie.
Well, that's what, yeah, I mean, Spurs have won two out of the last seven league games, and the two teams they've beaten have been Arsenal and Leeds, and, you know, that's not a coincidence. I mean, Arsenal have often actually gone into the bigger games and played conservatively, but on that day they didn't, and they went after Tottenham. Obviously, Leeds weren't going to compromise the way they play, and yeah, as you say, on both occasions it suited them really well, which, you know, Bielsa, we know, is kind of true to those principles. But you would think teams are going to be pretty wary of doing that against Tottenham. And I think sometimes that will benefit them. You know, we talked earlier in the season, I felt against Chelsea in that 0-0. Chelsea were terrified to really go for the jugular because of those, by that point, you know, that what Spurs had done to City the previous week and had done to United earlier on in the season. But I'd be surprised if many teams, certainly of kind of Leeds, you know, mid-table kind of standing, go and try and take on Tottenham in that way, because it doesn't really feel like a very good idea. And I think, you know, they were kind of the perfect opponents in many ways for Tottenham to play. I mean, I was thinking, you know, going into the Fulham game, I was thinking that had the potential to be quite awkward. Whereas actually then having had a few days off and then Leeds coming and playing the way they did, you know, and they had their chances. I think if they'd gone ahead, maybe it would have been a different game. But, you know, they left big gaps in behind and tried to play out. And, you know, the goalie didn't have a great day. And, yeah, I think it was kind of exactly what Tottenham needed after some games where opponents have dug in a bit more and frustrated them.
I'm not sure it actually would have been that different if Leeds had gone ahead, would it? Because I think they just kind of... they're kind of almost seem to be impervious to the scoreline in terms of how they play.
Maybe.
I mean, they're just carrying on playing the same way. They just won't ever sit back. They won't ever sit deep, will they? Just keep playing.
I'm not sure. I don't know whether or not we want to get stuck into the Bielsa discourse on here, although I wouldn't mind because I do enjoy it as a topic. But James, you look like you've got something to say.
I did find it. This isn't a criticism of the way Leeds play or how well they've done this season or the fact that they haven't. Or that they've been beaten quite heavily by a lot of those top six teams because they're a newly promoted team to the Premier League. And I'd say, in comparison to realistic expectation, they've done really well. And look, I mean, football is about teams playing in different ways, and if everyone played in the same way, it would be so boring. So it's good that a team has come up playing like that. It's like Sheffield United last season. But I thought it was mad on BT how much they were praising Leeds. And look, I mean, to be completely honest, I think they had like three defenders missing, right? Or four even.
Yeah, yeah.
They had to completely rejig the back four. It was always going to be an incredibly difficult afternoon for them. But I just thought it was mad that the extent to which they're being praised for playing out from the back when Ayling kept giving the ball away. And again, it doesn't really mean hammering Ayling because he's a fullback who's playing at centre-back who, you know, I don't think was especially comfortable doing that. But it did seem weird for that to be the kind of take-home from BT, to kind of just be piling on the praise on Leeds when, I mean, I've got to be honest, I didn't think they played particularly well. They gave the ball away a lot at the back. They were quite wasteful in the attacking third as well. And this isn't wanting to kind of take anything away from Spurs because I thought Spurs played very well. But I did think it was odd that the coverage was so positive towards Leeds. And again, this isn't a criticism of how they've done in general or how they play. This isn't me saying they should have, you know, sat eight men behind the ball and said, come at us, because given they've got where defenders missing, I think they would have still been beaten anyway. But I just thought it was odd that the tone of the analysis was quite so positive from a Leeds perspective.
Yeah, I wonder whether in part that's just because people punt, without wanting to like guess why people do what they do and say what they say. I think people in the media, I imagine that people in the media and the pundits are so stung by some of the reaction when it comes to Leeds. One, because of like all the Leeds fans on Twitter, and also because of all the kind of pro Bielsa people who tweet takes about football and who are journalists, that I think people are, I do think that it's like plausible that there would be some kind of overcompensation effect there. And people wanting to be nice about Bielsa and Leeds because they're very wary of what might happen if they're not.
I wonder as well, though, it's just there is an interest, I think, for people who haven't seen a ton of Leeds this season, seeing them trying to play in the way they do with the calibre of players there is something very interesting and different about that. And it might have just been, you sometimes go in really looking for something and wanting to enjoy something, even if the reality that you're looking at isn't playing out quite as you, that doesn't quite fit your narrative or preconceived ideas. I think we've all been guilty of that.
Surely this season of all seasons, everyone's seen loads of everyone, haven't they? I mean, that's all we've been doing is watching football, isn't
it? Yeah, I've watched far too much football. Less football, please. I want to get back to the stuff that Spurs did well. For me, like the standout moment really was the second goal, the one where Kane was out on the right-hand side and then bent that perfect pass around the back of the defence for Son to run onto and score first time. I think that's aesthetically one of my favourite Tottenham goals of the season. It reminded me of one of the goals in the Southampton game. And it goes to show something that we've talked about in this podcast before, which is that for as long as Kane and Son play this well, as in, you know, the best they've ever played, to be honest, then Spurs can do anything. Like, you know, Spurs are not a perfect team by any stretch of the imagination. There's lots of flaws in the team. And if Kane and Son stop playing well, then those flaws are a lot more obvious. But for as long as Kane and Son keep playing like this, Charlie, and because I know this is something you wrote about, anything is possible.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I mean, I did a piece after the game looking at Tottenham's reliance on Kane and basically posed the question, is relying on two players a problem when they are as reliably brilliant as they are? But the numbers for this are quite stark. I mean, they've scored between them 76% of Tottenham's league goals, which is a pretty huge proportion. I think it's 22 out of 29. And no other Premier League team comes close to that. I mean, looking at last season's top four, and this is up to date as of Saturday, so it would have changed ever so slightly for City and Chelsea, but possibly not even at all. But the top two scorers from Liverpool, City, United and Chelsea. So compared to 76% Kane and Son, it's 51% Liverpool, 38% City, 55% United, 33% Chelsea. And those sort of figures are more typical for the rest of the Premier League. So, you know, clearly Son and Kane are scoring a huge amount. Is that a problem? Well, no, as long as they remain fit and they remain in this kind of form. And there's not a, I think there's not a lot to suggest the form will go, although maybe a bit more for Son because he has been a little bit streakier in the past. And I think even, you know, in the last few weeks, he's been, he still scored some goals, but he's had some pretty quiet games. I mean, I think particularly Wolves away and Palace away. So it's just quite an interesting dynamic. I mean, the fitness thing is perhaps more of a concern, just given how much they've played, you know, and between them, they've missed something like 99 minutes total in the Premier League combined, Kane and Son this season. I mean, even on the weekend when they were 3-0 up, Kane came off with a few minutes, Son still did the 90. And there was a moment in the first half where they both went down almost simultaneously. And I thought, like, you were almost relieved there weren't fans in the ground, because the level of anxiety there would have been in that moment would have been like genuinely something to behold. I mean, even without fans, you could kind of feel that tension of how much that would mean. So, I mean, I think, you know, they continue to just be absolutely peerless in the rest of the Premier League. I guess it's just, you know, is there an issue that others don't step up? And it would have been great. Steven Bergwijn hasn't scored in 27 matches. It would have been a great game for him to end that run. And he had a couple of chances. And, he's someone we've talked about before that he's having, in many ways, a really good season. It is just kind of, you know, that he isn't scoring. And you look at, you know, the rest of the supporting cast, as it were. Moura scored one league goal in the whole of 2020. Lamella hasn't scored in the league since September 2019. Dele Alli, I know he hasn't played a lot, last scored in the league in March. Bale, obviously, has scored one since he came back, hasn't played a lot. Lo Celso has one league goal since joining Tottenham a year and a half ago. So, you know, you just like the goals maybe to be spread over a few more players. But when, you know, as you say, Jack, when Kane and Son are playing this well, it's not an issue. It's just whether it becomes one. And we've seen, you know, like Leicester, Kane and Son were shackled. No one else could score. Liverpool, obviously, was the game. Bergwijn had those chances. So I think we have seen it be an issue already a little bit. But I guess, you know, Mourinho just hopes those two stay fit and stay at the ridiculous level they're at currently.
James, do you think it's sustainable to play like that, or to be that dependent on two world-class players, or not?
I mean, my instinct is probably not. I mean, as Charlie says, Son has been a player who's been prone to kind of dipping in and out of form. I mean, to be honest, I haven't actually thought he's played especially well in the last kind of 4 or 5 weeks, really. I thought he wasn't great against Arsenal or Liverpool despite scoring in those two games, which isn't necessarily a criticism, because when you're playing more or less every match, like, that fatigue is going to kind of build up over the course of the season, isn't it? And you're going to feel it by the time you get to December. So, yeah, I mean, I think it kind of speaks for a lack of depth that I think we talked about before. Having kind of started the season very enthusiastic about how strong the squad was, the reality of the performances of those, I mean, not even the fringe players, just everyone else other than those two, has been such that the Spurs have just had to have both of them on the pitch for pretty much every minute until the game is effectively won. And they just really need any other player to turn up in the second half of the season and come in and, you know, score 6, 7, 8 goals in the league between now and the end of the season, be that Bale or Bergwijn or whoever else. Bale or Bergwijn, I think, would be the two. I think you'd say most likely, I think, just purely on the basis of the way they play. I mean, Lucas, maybe. Again, he's another player who, you know, will have 2 or 3 good games and then kind of fade away for a couple of months.
It has got me thinking, and I don't want to get too stuck into the question of whether or not Spurs are going to win the league, but like, generally speaking, nowadays, this isn't how teams win the league. Like, they win you know, they have a much more broad-based attack rather than simply relying on two individuals. So I've been looking, trying to think back, like, when was the last time that a team did really well who was this just dependent on, you know, two guys to do all their attacking? And funnily enough, the one example that came to my head would have been Mourinho's 2014-15 Chelsea team who won the Premier League. But I was just looking at the stats to see if it was at all comparable. And that year, Diego Costa got 20 Premier League goals. Eden Hazard got 14 Premier League goals. And then there's a big drop-off. And then you get to Loic Remy with 7, Oscar with 6, and John Terry with 5. I'm not sure as it stands, no other Spurs player is going to get 5, 6, or 7. Like, you guys were mentioning Bergwijn and Bale and Lucas, but Ndombele is currently the third top scorer in the league so far with 2. Like, it would be amazing if somebody were to get 5, 6, or 7.
Yeah, he's the only other player besides those two with more than one league goal so far this season. I mean, I guess you could make the case Mahrez and Vardy in 15-16 for Leicester.
Yeah, I think they have still had, you know, Okazaki and I guess they're probably like the closest example really of teams who funneled all their attacking through two players. But it is just it's just very different, isn't it?
You just need a lot of players with 2, 3, 4 goals, don't you, if you have that, I think. And that might be where, you know, you need more goals from set pieces basically from Darren or Devarad or whatever, don't you, I think. If you're gonna score so few goals from open play through other players.
And Toby scored the other day, but it's, again, attacking set pieces hasn't really been something. I don't think Spurs have been really as good on attacking set pieces as we probably hoped they would be when Mourinho took over.
Ever since Eriksen left and we don't have his corners anymore, James.
I mean, Son did pretty well with that one into the near post on Saturday, didn't he?
He also put the one in for Alderweireld's goal against Arsenal in the derby last season.
So in 2015-16 in the league, Jamie Vardy got 24 goals, Riyad Mahrez got 17 goals. Then you're right, there is a massive drop-off before you get to Leonardo Ulloa with 6 goals, Shinji Okazaki with 5 goals, and then Robert Huth with 3 goals in the Premier League. So you're right, that's a comparable situation.
How many did Leicester score that season in the league? I'm just looking it up.
I feel like they won a lot of games 1-0 at the end, didn't they?
They didn't score a ton, but they scored 68. God, that really isn't many.
I mean, that
it
really is. That's not many, is it?
No.
That's mad.
Spurs will get more than that this year, won't they?
I mean, what will inevitably happen is, like, someone will... Either Lucas Bale or Bergwijn will score 5 league goals by the end of the season. I absolutely guarantee that. And that's just the way it goes, isn't it? One of those three players will have a good bit of form where they'll, you know, they'll score a couple of goals in one game. Bale's obviously already got one. And then, you know, you're only a couple away, aren't you? So one of those will get there. But yeah, you're right. It is a problem. It just puts so much pressure on those two players. And, you know, even we've seen it in Europa League games that they've looked, there have been moments that it looked like they're going to struggle to break down teams you would say probably should be swept aside quite easily without those two players, or one or other of those two players on the pitch.
Just to give that context as well, so say, like, what those numbers Jack read out for Mahrez and Vardy obviously sound pretty stark, but that's still, they only scored 60% of Leicester's league goals that season compared to 76 so far this season from Kane and Son. And obviously, you know, it's early in the season, relatively speaking, but that does give a sense, like those numbers I gave earlier of the last season's top four, of how, you know, unique at the moment Spurs are for having that level of reliance on two players.
One player who's not scoring, who I would like to talk about a little bit, is Steven Bergwijn, who came back into the team for the Leeds game. And I know it's tough for him because he's not scoring goals, but I do watch him and I do understand why he's in the team. Like, his movement is good. He's very selfless. He tries really hard. He defends. I think his all-round game looks kind of better than Lucas Moura's, even though Moura's probably better in front of goal. James, are you kind of pro-Bergwijn or anti-Bergwijn?
Yeah, broadly speaking, I mean, I think he is kind of... I mean, he's almost that classic cliche Mourinho player, isn't he? Of like an attacking player who's been put in the team to do a defensive job. But I think you saw more of a kind of positive stuff he can do in an offensive sense on Saturday. I mean, he a couple of times he got himself into good positions to play passes and pick the wrong option. I mean, particularly in the first half, he picked a couple up from straight passes from Luke Ayling and then didn't quite get it quite right himself, and Spurs weren't able to kind of exploit like a 3-on-3 or 3-on-2 or whatever. But, I mean, his finishing, and I know there are a few grumbles about this after the game at Anfield where he missed a couple of good chances. But, I mean, that one in the first half on Saturday where... I can't think who it was who played the ball over from the left now. Was it Davis?
Ben Davis, yeah.
Yeah. And then he kind of controlled the ball really nicely and turned and got himself into a shooting position on his right foot, like on the edge of the 6-yard box. And really all you've got to do there is hit the target and you're more than likely going to score, unless it's right down the keeper's throat. And he kind of leans back and puts it way over the bar. I don't know if that's... It would be incredibly easy to say that was a result of low confidence, having missed a couple of other chances and not scored a league goal yet this season. I mean, I've not, you know, without talking to him and being around him, you just can't possibly know that. But it does kind of strike me as the kind of chance you'd expect a player of that quality to score, surely. And that's the kind of opportunity you want, you know, a player in that wide position to take, right?
Yeah, I think, it, you know, the one in the second half as well, where he went through, and again, it kind of typified it because the touch before was brilliant to set himself. And then he basically smashed it, put his foot through it in a way that you do when you haven't scored for, you know, that's your 27th game without scoring and you just really want to get on the score sheet. You know, it wasn't the finish of someone really confident in front of goal. You know, I think that will hopefully change. And, you know, it's such a cliche about, you know, you just need one to go in off your bum or whatever. But I do think he just needs that first goal. And hopefully, you know, that will liberate him a bit and he'll go on a bit of a run. But yeah, I mean, I tweeted at halftime saying I thought he'd played well and got a barrage of people saying, no, he hasn't. He's been awful. Da, da, da. And I just don't see that. I think he had another good game. He's had some really good games. I think he's really important to the way they play in opening up space for Kane and Son. I think most people really appreciate him. And hopefully, yeah, once he can add goals to his game, then that'll make a big difference. I mean, we asked Mourinho about him afterwards, and Mourinho said that he's had a lot of niggles this season, so hasn't been completely fully fit. And you think, well, if he does shrug those off, you know, he had that bad injury at the end of last season as well that it's kind of forgotten about because the lockdown meant he didn't really miss any games. But, you know, those sort of things do make a difference. So hopefully once he is at completely full speed, he will start putting some of those away, and then that puts quite a different complexion on it.
Someone else who's enjoying a good run at the moment is Harry Winks, who has started 3 games in a row in all competitions, which must make it his best run this season. I think he's looking pretty good. Like, he was the guy who won the ball back off Leeds with that clever bit of pressing to play the ball through to Bergwijn to set up Tottenham's penalty to open the scoring in that game. I think he brings a kind of just a little bit, maybe a little, he's just better on the ball than Sissoko, basically. He can't do everything Sissoko can do physically or defensively, but he does make Spurs a little bit more active in possession, I think, and a little bit more imaginative. Charlie, this has obviously come at a time when Winks is desperate to play more and has asked Mourinho about playing more. What's your reading of the situation at the moment?
Yeah, well, I wrote a column on Winks last month, kind of looking at his dilemma and saying I think he should stay. These things can change very quickly, and you know, a move certainly in January and for a player of his sort of level, I think is really hard to get right. You're often having to move down, and once you do that, it's really hard to move back up. And I think it's kind of played out like that. Like he was given his chance against Stoke. He took it. He played really well and has played the next couple of league games. And I think, you know, he's someone that, you know, like Ndombele has done something similar. We've even seen that from Alderweireld. You know, he was not playing at the start of the season, has come back in. And you wonder if someone like Dele looks at Winks and thinks, well, it is possible to do that. So I think it's been well timed for him as well, in the sense that Mourinho acknowledged that the Sissoko Højbjerg axis worked very well when they were playing in that, you know, sort of back six almost. Teams have become a bit wise to that, and Spurs struggle to move the ball up the pitch, and Winks is just much better at doing that. He's a good quick passer, and that has made a difference for Tottenham in the last few games. And yeah, as you say, him and Højbjerg were really good on the weekend at picking off passes and starting Tottenham attacks. Like, that was one of the reasons why Spurs had so many efforts on goal. And Winks did it again in the second half when he intercepted one and then tried another long-range special. Got a bit carried away after that one in the Europa League. But yeah, it seems like the situation's changed. And I think they will have so many games between now and the end of the season that I'd be very surprised if he doesn't get a number that is acceptable to Gareth Southgate. He's not going to play every single week. You know, Tottenham have competition in those areas, but he's worked his way back in the team. And, you know, he's first choice now ahead of Sissoko, obviously depending slightly on the opposition. And I think he has improved Tottenham's ability to play up the pitch, and we saw that against Leeds and in patches, you know, in the first half against Wolves as well, until it all slightly fell apart in the second half.
I do think the kind of thing he does is quite often the kind of thing that gets overlooked by people. He seems to be a bit of a scapegoat for me. Like, you see, like when Spurs tweet the team and he's in the starting 11, you'll get a load of, you know, people with Lo Celso as their avatar moaning and groaning. But I think what he can bring to the team is really important in a game like that, where, as you say, Charlie, they don't necessarily need to have that kind of back six. They can afford to have someone a bit more expansive, which isn't to say he isn't... he's pretty tenacious, isn't he? I mean, he will put a tackle in, he'll put himself about, he'll kind of get involved and, you know, do a defensive job when needed. But he's so good at, like, playing those balls quickly, and which is mad because I think there's a perception that he's the opposite.
I know, yeah.
It's like the worst misreading of any Spurs player in the last few years. This idea that he can't play balls quickly, which he definitely can. Even so, like you say, with that penalty, he won that ball and played that ball to Bergwijn straight away. So yeah, I, I,
I think it's mad if a player like him can't be playing a lot of football in a team that are going to end up playing 60 games in a season. I mean, it seems crazy to me that the idea that he wouldn't be able to play a lot.
I mean, but it's a really interesting one, James. Like, you know, maybe it's a broader point, but, you know, this is a guy who's homegrown. He clearly cares a lot about the club. He was a supporter growing up and, you know, seems to have a great attitude and yet has become a bit of a lightning rod for criticism. And I just kind of wonder why that is.
I really don't understand that. I think it's absolutely mad. I think he's a really good player. And, you know, he's not the best player at the club. But, I mean, I don't really see that that's a reason that he would be, like, kind of criticised. I mean, if anything, he's, you know, far, far worse players have been massive cult heroes. Totally. I mean, it's absolutely insane to me that he's not, like, one of the most popular players.
I know, yeah. With these debates, it's like, you know, I'm not a Spurs fan, so I can't kind of identify with how Spurs fans might feel about a particular player. It's not really my place, but I am surprised that he's not more popular. Like, he's really good. He's pretty good. He's really consistent. He's a Spurs fan. He's from the academy. He's also played like a lot of really. He's played a lot of really hard games, like really well for Spurs.
He's played the start of his career. League final.
Yeah, he came out for the Champions League final. He's played really well against Real Madrid, against Barcelona.
Yeah,
he's got real big game pedigree for such a young player. And I don't know if it's just like if this is just modern fans, and it's like, you know, this, you know. Lo Celso is obviously a really good player as well, but is it like because he's exciting and from Argentina and they signed him for Betis, like somehow that makes him a bit more glam than the lad from like Hemel Hempstead who came through the academy?
But I mean, that does seem like kind of the obvious answer to that. But then you look like further up the pitch and there's Harry Kane, who is kind of like an even less glamorous bloke. And he's obviously the most loved player at the club and one of the best players in the world. It's this kind of, it kind of seems obvious to me that that's kind of what you should be looking at and thinking, oh, actually, yeah, it's fine to kind of love this guy.
Yeah, but I think Charlie is absolutely spot on, which is that Spurs' schedule is ridiculous. Like, Spurs have got so, so many games. Like, this is, assuming they beat Wolfsberger in the Europa League last 32 next month, it's just going to be relentless football. It's like, if football is allowed to carry on and it's not stopped by the government, Spurs will be playing basically every day until the end of the season. So, like, there's more than enough games to go around. So, my personal opinion is that I hope Winks doesn't leave this month because I want to see him continue to play for Tottenham. Another issue at Tottenham this week was on Friday night, the circulation of a photograph of Eric Lamella, Giovanni Lo Celso, and Sergio Reguilon, and some of their friends, family and partners, along with West Ham's Manuel Lanzini, at a Christmas lunch that clearly and flagrantly breached the COVID Christmas mixing rules in the UK. Tottenham came out with a pretty strongly worded statement in condemnation of the three players involved in this. I think lots of people on social media and just in real life saw it and were pretty pissed off because this was obviously really bad, James. It seems like the fans are not impressed.
It is incredibly stupid, isn't it? I mean, I can't actually comprehend that you can like live through what we've all lived through over the last, what, like 8, 9, 10 months and then get to Christmas Day and all pile into someone's house without kind of realising that that is obviously just massively inappropriate, especially when you're a professional footballer and you're going to have to play loads of matches over that period. That you're going to be at risk of missing or whatever. I mean, it's absolutely mad. When you think of how many people have like, and I'm sure there were people listening to this who have ended up having quite a crap Christmas because, you know, they've not been able to spend it with the family. You know, maybe they've been on their own or they've not been able to see all the family that they wanted to see. And it is like a massive slap in the face to all of those people who have kind of really suffered over the last couple of weeks for a few footballers to kind of get together with their families and all spend time together. I mean, I suppose in a way you can maybe argue there's a little bit of mitigation for Reguilon because, you know, he's a young lad in a new country for the first time away from home. It's probably all a bit unsettling, which isn't to defend it, but you can kind of understand how maybe someone in his position might kind of feel like they really, really don't be on their own. And then if someone invites them over to their house, you might kind of go along with it. But I really do feel like particularly Lamella and Lo Celso should know better than that. And I think, you know, And for two players who have missed quite a lot of the season through injury already, to then kind of take that kind of risk, I think, is so irresponsible and like a massive slap in the face of fans.
Yeah, I think that's spot on. I'd really recommend as well Matt Woosnam. He's our Crystal Palace reporter. And he wrote about this in relation to Milivojevic, who, you know, was similarly photographed breaching the rules and was retained as captain for their game against Sheffield United. And yeah, I think, you know, like James says there, Matt, it just makes the point of how much of a slap in the face that feels for supporters and for everyone, all of whom have made tons of sacrifices. I mean, what would you have felt, James, and how do you think it would have gone down with the fan base if, say, Reguilon had been dropped and made a show of? I mean, do you think that would have been justified?
I mean, I'm sure there would have been some people that would have objected to that, where there are some people that are objecting to wearing face masks in supermarkets. So, you know, there are obviously some people that are stupid enough to think that. But I would have thought most right-minded people would be fine with that. And in the end, obviously, him not playing in the game hasn't made any difference because he was an unused substitute, so it was fine. Have to admit, I was a little bit surprised he was there on the bench. You kind of have a degree of sympathy with Mourinho there, I guess. He's kind of caught between trying to make a statement and leaving him out and, you know, having prepared for the game and picked his 11. I mean, I don't know if there's been any indication of whether he changed that on the basis of what happened or whether Davis was going to play anyway. So I kind of got the impression he wanted like the slightly more defensively minded fullbacks playing in that game anyway. So perhaps that was the way he was going to go, and it didn't make a difference. But yeah, it must be incredibly annoying for Mourinho. Although having said that, obviously he's not been without his own sort of lockdown breaches over the last 12 months. So I'm not sure he could afford to be too judgmental about that.
Yeah, I just want to completely agree with what you two have both said. I mean, for anyone who hasn't seen their parents or whatever, or grandparents or whatever this Christmas, it it's obviously an insult, but it's also, you know, to take the kind of cold-headed, if that's the right way of putting it, like Premier League football approach, like viewpoint on this. The Premier League is not invincible. Like, the Premier League is not guaranteed to continue and complete the season. You know, it's totally plausible that it would be stopped just like it was stopped last March. And frankly, the more players that, you know, the more that players break the rules, the more likely it is that it'll get stopped. And then suddenly this whole kind of money-making machine will grind to a halt again. So the player, you know, this is really, really serious stuff for the players to take the piss like this. And it's very, you know, it's not promising for the survival of the Premier League season that the players should behave in this way.
But also, it's a slap in the face of the other players as well. And totally, I'm sure there'll be other players there who would have, like, not seen people they wanted to see over Christmas New Year.
Yeah, massively.
For various reasons. And, you know, then these three lads walking to the dressing room for the game on the 27th, having kind of all spent that time together. I mean, it's really bad. And I get that, you know, it's a mad situation that you can be criticising people for spending Christmas with their families. I mean, that is genuinely ludicrous, but that is a situation we're in right now.
And especially as well, like, you know, when they are amongst the only people who actually get to socialise with their colleagues, you know, I'm not saying they're going out, but at least they have regular human contact, which is something that a lot of us would love to have.
We've got this.
Yeah, exactly. We get this.
We have to do this.
Exactly.
One day, guys, we'll be back recording this podcast face to face again. I think the last one we did was what, early March. So we're definitely going to make the 1 year anniversary of that. Yeah. And then one day we'll be back together. Anyway, back in this kind of the world of optimism and football. Tottenham have got a semi final on Tuesday night against Brentford in the Carabao Cup. This is really exciting, isn't it, James? A big, you know, semi final. They're one game away from Wembley at home against a Championship team. It what does could go wrong?
Yeah, exactly. What could go wrong? I mean, you'll remember as I do the last time Spurs played a Football League team in a League Cup semi final. It's obviously Sheffield United in 2015.
Yeah,
Pochettino's first season. And they were in League One, I think, weren't they, actually?
Mm.
Yeah. I mean, that was not a particularly comfortable two legged experience. And I think in the end, what was it? I think it was the Townsend penalty in the first leg that probably made the difference in the end. And then it was 2-2 up there.
Is that the Christian Eriksen free kick?
Yeah, Christian Eriksen, weird free kick right over the kind of far post.
Love that trajectory, yeah.
Yeah, it was good. Yeah, so I think that's probably an indication that these things are quite often not quite as straightforward as they seem. And clearly Brentford are one of the better teams in that division. So, you know, not to be taken lightly. But the reality of it is, yes, it's a home game against a championship club in a one-legged semi-final. An incredibly rare thing. So, yeah, Spurs should obviously be big favourites there. And it's a massive opportunity to get into that final. The first domestic final Spurs have been in since that one in 2015, I guess. So, yeah, it kind of feels like it's kind of snuck up a little bit. I guess partly because it is only one leg in and it'll be done on Tuesday evening, but also because, you know, it feels like so much has happened over the last few weeks with Spurs that the idea they're suddenly in this game, you know, having not played a League Cup game between whatever it was, the end of September and just before Christmas either. It hasn't really felt like there's been a cup run because those two previous games are so far apart. It all kind of feels like it's been a bit staggered.
And there was the bye against Orient as well, so it's kind of even fewer games.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, it is a bit of a weird one. And now obviously we know that the final has been kind of kicked 2 months down the road. Is it 25th of April, I think that's going to be, if Spurs, well, whoever's in it. So if Spurs do get there, it's then going to be another kind of 2.5 months before... 3.5 months, sorry, before we actually see the final, in which time so much could happen, so much could change. And they'll play Manchester United or Manchester City in the league before that final. And it's just so strange that thing could be hanging over the club. I don't know, make that sound like it's a bad thing, but that thing could be in the background for such a long time, for such a big chunk of the season. And I get the intention is to make sure or to try and give the best possible chance of there being fans in the ground, but I'd be amazed if that happens, or certainly not on a big scale. But it does seem weird that, like, that, you know, they try to cram so much into that competition early in the season. I don't know why that Orient game was called off, because there wasn't an opportunity to play it again. And I think some clubs played like midweek 3 weeks in a row, didn't they, in the League Cup? And now we get to the semi-final and they suddenly decide, oh, actually, we'll play the final in April now. And it just feels like you crammed it all in at the start for no reason.
Yeah, it's the biggest consequence of the weird scheduling, isn't it? That it's been so erratic. As you say, yeah. There's been like crammed in, then nothing, then a little more, and then a huge gap again. It's a weird run, in inverted commas.
It kind of feels like, it's like the Italian Cup or something, isn't it? Or the Spanish Cup. That's the way that things seem to work in those kind of countries where like the Cup is such a... It's kind of seen as such a kind of second thought that like it is almost kind of crammed in as and when they can. And I get, you know... in this season of all seasons, the scheduling is complicated and the League Cup is, you know, even a lower priority than the FA Cup. But it does seem mad that you can change that at the last minute to me.
Who do you think they should play? Like, how important is this game, Charlie? Would you play Kane and Son and those guys, or would you make a few changes or what?
I think the fact they've got Marine on the weekend is a real help here, because... They could play a close to full strength team tomorrow and still have a week before their next league game, which you'd think would be the next game where most of those guys are going to have to play. So I think he can go stronger than might have been prudent if, say, they had a big league game that coming this Saturday. I suspect he will name a very strong team, maybe with a couple of changes, but you know, only the couple of changes that he might make for a league game. I don't think it's going to be a sort of wholesale changes. As it would be for, say, a Europa League group game. I think those changes would and absolutely should come against Marine in the FA Cup on the weekend.
That Marine game, I mean, I I'm a big advocate of non-league football and I watch a lot of football at the kind of equivalent level down here, seventh tier teams. And like the idea that you can play against a team from that level, a good Premier League team, you know, playing against a team from the seventh tier, with no fans in the ground on a pitch that I think will probably be pretty good because I've not played that many matches recently. I mean, Charlie was talking about it earlier and I think Charlie described it as like a sterile environment. And I guess it kind of is that. It's almost like a science experiment. What will happen when you play, you know, I mean, it's like effectively going to be like a sort of game on a training ground really, isn't it, I guess. And this isn't to be like disparaging and disrespectful to Marine, but like, Spurs should be able to make 11 changes and win that game really comfortably. I just feel like you're kind of taking out, like, you're taking out the FA Cup chaos, but you're taking out like the FA Cup chaos factor, aren't you, really? All the things that you think make the FA Cup magic, to use the cliche, you're kind of stripping all that away. And it's kind of, it is such a massive shame. And I know what it will mean to a club like that to play a Premier League team. Yeah. And obviously, like, some of the financial stuff is going to kind of be compensated for by like loads of Spurs fans buying like programs and half scarves and stuff online and tickets to a match they're not actually going to be able to attend, which is great that that's happening. But like, you know, for the fans, for the actual fans of the club who have been like, you know, and there'll be like 500-600 of them who are watching them play every week, you now won't get to watch them play against like a team that played in the European Cup final 2 years ago. It's such a massive shame. It's, you know, it's really sad that that's happened. Yeah, but I mean, as for the game, I mean, it should just be like it should be routine. It should be routine. Should. But we know the way these things go. But I just think you're taking so much of the uncertainty out of it that I would just be... even a massive pessimist like me would be very surprised that Spurs didn't win that incredibly comfortably.
Yeah. It's really unusual to have a team from Step 4 play a Premier League team. It's so unusual. They're in the Northern Premier League Division 1 Northwest. So that means if they got promoted back into the Northern Premier League, where they've been for a very long time before their recent relegation, and then they got promoted out of that, then they'd be in Conference North, Step 2. They are not near the Football League. And so for a team like that, like, you know, like James, I'm a big non-league fan. And for a team like that, if you get like a Football League team in the first round, that's really cool. But to get a Premier League team in the third round is incredible. Never mind a Premier League team who's like one of the best teams consistently over the last sort of 5 to 10 years. It just is such an incredible, it really is an incredible tie. And like James says, it is completely heartbreaking that it won't be, you know, the people who make up a club like that can really experience it in the full and proper way, which of course would be with a full stadium. But, you know, we are where we are, unfortunately.
I mean, even with 11 changes, you're talking potentially about players of the calibre of like Dele Alli, Lucas Moura, Davinson Sanchez. Like, it's crazy what the, you know, the gulf in quality that there should be. And yeah, I mean, take out all those variables, it'll be very interesting to see how that plays out, and if it is as big a gulf, or if that is bridged in any way just by, you know, there won't be the fans there, but if it is just, you know, the how much they're going to be up for it and the attitude, to what extent that can bridge the gap to any sort of extent.
So we're going to finish off today's podcast with a quiz. My initial idea was to do a quiz of players who've played for Tottenham Hotspur and Brentford. Now, I can only come up with one. If you know it, shout it out. But the problem was I couldn't find like a website that tells you who all these players would be. So
is it Clive Allen? It feels like it must be Clive Allen, surely.
He's not who I was thinking of.
He didn't play for Brentford, I don't think.
Okay. Fine.
So the one I was thinking of was Alex Pritchard.
Yeah, okay.
And a season on loan at Brentford. But then that would be not a great quiz, to be honest, if there's only one correct answer, and we'd be guessing. So we're going to do the conventional format because of quiz, that is guessing an 11, because as I'm sure James would know, Tottenham actually played Brentford, strangely enough, three times in the League Cup second round in 92, 93, 98, 99, and 2000, 2001, each of them over two legs. Seems insane to me that the League Cup second round used to take place over two legs. Like, why on earth did that happen? But I suppose it was a very different time for football. But the most recent of those games was in September 2000, so 20 and a bit years ago, Tottenham beat Brentford 2-0 at White Hart Lane to progress through to the third round of the League Cup. This was right at the very end of the Alan Sugar era, which, of course, we've written about a fair bit recently. So hopefully these names will be in your minds. Usual format, usual rules apply. 11 names to get. Who wants to start?
Can I just say before we start that Steve Perriman played for Brentford as well? I have just Googled that, but I don't want us to get abused for not saying that. So I've said
okay, cool. Okay, Steve Perriman. And obviously, listeners, if you know anyone else who's played for Tottenham and Brentford, please tweet us.
Yeah,
but I'm really curious now.
Now in a non-abusive way, because we didn't miss that obvious one.
Steve, if you're listening, no disrespect, mate.
God, I'm just, my main thing is like how much they would have rotated, like how much rotation was a thing at that time, given they wouldn't have been in Europe.
These are all quite recognisable names. There's not many shock names on. I've heard of all these players. There's no like, oh wow, who the fuck is he?
Should I go first?
Yeah, Charlie, you get to go first.
Neil Sullivan?
Yes.
So, where, this is 2000, isn't it? Sorry, 2000, 2001.
Yeah, this is from September 2000.
Stephen Carr?
Yes.
Sol Campbell?
No.
Fuck.
Chris Perry.
Yes.
Thatcher? Do you have been left back?
Yes, Thatcher.
It's not the first time you said yes, Thatcher, is it, Jack?
Well, hey, very, very good. That works.
Who would the other centre back have been? Stefan Iversen.
Yes.
I'm just thinking, this player definitely would have, this was his first season when he was good, Rebrov, but I'm just thinking whether he may have, would he have been rested? I'll go Rebrov.
Yes, Rebrov. Three all guys, good performance so far. 5 names left on the board.
Stefan Freund.
Yes, Stefan Freund.
God, what? Stephen Clements?
No. No Clements. Four names left to get.
Tim Sherwood?
Yes, Tactics Tim. Tactics Tim.
In the engine room.
Matty Etherington?
Nope. No Etherington.
Simon Davis?
Nope. No Simon Davis. So there's three names left to get. I'd say two of them are fairly gettable. One of them is maybe slightly harder.
I can't think who the centre-back is going to be. Oh, actually, wait. Okay, it's not my turn, is it? Is it?
It's a free-for-all now.
Oh, is it? Okay. Mauricio Chirico. Ben Thatcher played centre-back. Is that right?
No, Chirico.
Fine. Never mind.
Should I spice this up with some clues?
Yes.
So of the three names left, two of them are people that the Athletic has spoken to fairly often.
Vega?
Yes, Vega.
My boy, Ramon. Les Ferdinand.
Les Ferdinand. Like, yeah. Oh,
Charlie.
Charlie's pulled it back to 5-all.
Charlie's got a massive advantage here. Hasn't he spoken to him?
One name left on the board. It's 5-all after Charlie's incredible service.
This has got to be a wide player, hasn't it? Surely, I'm guessing.
It is a wide player, yeah. He is not someone who I immediately associate with playing for Tottenham, although he did play for Tottenham for a bit. I associate him with other clubs in England who he played for.
Ivan Leon Hodgson.
Ivan Leon Hodgson.
That was me first.
I'm going to call that a tie.
Oh, come on.
No, it's 5.5 each.
Let's have a tiebreaker. Let's get the subs.
A tiebreaker? Okay, who scored?
Leon Hodgson.
I actually lost the bit.
Rebrov.
I've lost the right tab to be able to find out the correct answer to this.
I feel like Leonardson did actually score quite a few goals for Spurs. I wouldn't be surprised if that actually was right.
It was Leonardson and Iversen who scored. So yeah, I guess you're right.
Moral victory. Again.
Yeah, I'd kind of memory hold the fact that Leonardson played for Tottenham, to be honest. In my mind he's Liverpool and Wimbledon.
Wimbledon, yeah. I think it was Wimbledon. He used to wear sweatbands, didn't he, on his wrist. His trademark manoeuvre.
Yeah, part of the legendary Norwegian invasion of Wimbledon.
Yes, yeah.
I don't think he was. I think he was there before that, but okay.
No, you must be right, yeah. He joined in 1994.
But I mean,
Egil Olsen didn't get the job until later, and they didn't... Sam Amand didn't sell to the Norwegians until later.
I thought you meant just that period in the Premier League where there are a lot of good Norwegians. He was at the forefront of that.
I've humiliated myself again. Okay. Okay, guys. Well, that was a really fun podcast. Thank you very much to James and Charlie. Congratulations on your shared quiz title. Thank you, producer Tom. And thank you, everyone, for listening and for all your kind questions and comments over the course of Christmas. Please let us know if you've got anything you wanted to discuss next time. Let us know if you can remember anyone else who's played for Brentford and Tottenham Hotspur. And otherwise we'll be back next week looking back at the Brentford and Marine games and looking forward to another busy week at Tottenham.
I won the quiz.